Radio, Digiti's knowledge sharing podcast, exploring themes and topics that are relevant to our everyday work. Digi Translation recently held a special event, a full day brainstorming session on how the academic world and the language industry could better collaborate. For this, members of the EMT network, the European Masters in Translation network, and members of the LINT group, the Language Industry Expert Group, met in Brussels in Digiti's premises in Rue de Genève. We managed to gather four of these experts around our microphones the day before the event to discuss about what they do in their networks and how they wish to better work together within what they see as a true ecosystem. So for this special episode of Digiti Radio, I also asked two colleagues from Digi Translation, Inka Lisa Vihonen and Anna Kokinidou, to tell us more about the EMT network and the LINT group. So first, let's hear Inka Lisa and Anna. Hello, Inka Lisa Vihonen.
Hello, hello.
So Inka Lisa, you are responsible in Digi Translation of the relations of Digiti with language industry actors. And in particular, you are dealing with the what we call the LINT group, which in our jargon means the Language Industry Expert Group. And this LINT group provides Digi Translation with expertise on the translation industry. Could you say a few words about this LINT group?
Indeed, it is it's a DGT expert group. So it is what it says actually in the title. These are experts that help us with their expertise. They share their knowledge, and they go to events and they tell us about it. So it's a very useful tool used by the commission, by the way. There are lots of expert groups and in different domains under each DG. It's the only one here at DGT, and it has existed for a little bit over 10 years. It's a completely transparent, because this is handled by SecGen, so they want to make sure that it's super transparent, open. So it's always by a public call. You know, we can put an announcement saying that we are looking for language industry experts for the LINT group. So it has become a kind of a trademark for our industry, so people normally they would know that there is something called LINT. They might not in the outside, and I hope in the inside of DGT as well, so people know more or less that these are very qualified experts of the industry that come here from time to time and give us their advice, so we can consult them. So that's in brief what they are.
And why did DGT feel that it needed to create such a group?
Well, of course, I cannot go into the heads of our big bosses, but in my view, it is very useful to know what is happening in the industry, because especially for our sector, as we know, for the past 10 years, the developments have been so fast. The public service is a little bit slower for all the right reasons, because we need to have a stable service and we need to provide things that are required by law. But also things happen in the outside that we need to follow. In my view, it's also to counterbalance the work we do with academia, because we also want to ensure that there are enough qualified translators for us, but also for the whole industry. So it's to counterbalance that, because in studies as well, the commission has lately been highlighting this work-life aspect to make sure that there are enough people in fields that where they are needed, and also that they have the right skills. You know, this is part of the skills agenda as well. So it's very important that actually people who work in the field can tell the academia that this is what we need, especially in this situation that is everything is going super fast.
So how many members are there in this LINT group, and what kind of profiles do they have?
So we have, I think in the rules it said that we can have a maximum 12 members, and we actually have the 12 at the moment. And they, you know, their profiles are, they vary because there are subsectors, of course, in our industry. So some of them might be a little bit more inclined to technology, language mm-hmm. technology, translation memories, artificial intelligence. So there are people who are more into audiovisual translation, which is a huge area that I think the DDT also needs to follow, because much of the material nowadays is audiovisual. So something to be followed. Mm-hmm. There are people who work in the third sector, in the NGO sector. Basically, we have a really wide array of people. And we also have people from the government services as well, you know, so it's really very comprehensive.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Inkali Savihonen.
Thank you. Thank you for the interview.
Hello, Anna Kokinidou.
Hello, Caroline. Bonjour.
Anna, you are the coordinator of the European Masters in Translation in DigiTranslation. The European Masters in Translation, or EMT, as we call it in our jargon, is a partnership between DigiTranslation and a large network of universities. Could you explain to us in a few words what the EMT is about?
The EMT stands for the European Masters in Translation, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Caroline. And the European Master's in Translation stands for a network of university master's degrees in translation, which are part of the network. If we take it, and let's take it from the beginning, the EMT network is a brainchild, a concept, and a very important idea established by the DGT. It has been running, let's say, almost for 15 years now. It is a network, a flagship project of the DGT, but also a quality brand, and the registered trademark at the European Union Intellectual Property Office. So actually it's a brand name, one of the unique brand names granted by the Commission to the members that fulfill set criteria.
And what are the objectives of the EMT? Why was this network established?
The network has been established as it brings together these quality masters from all over the European Union and beyond. These masters are in turn granted the quality label EMT University. For this, they fulfill set quality criteria for the professional training, the academic background, the skills development, innovative research and technology, the translation tools, competence building and employability of the graduates. So in a way, by conforming to the label EMT University, they meet some very high quality standards. The objectives of the EMT are exactly these ones. In a way, in the DGT, we have founded the family of best practices in translation training, in upskilling future translators, in exploring the changing landscape in the field, and in following research in academia.
Now, how does the EMT network work in practice?
Yes, in practice it works, it runs 5-year mandates. Now we're actually coming, Caroline, to the end of the current mandate. The EMT from 2014 to 2019 has had 68 members. And now for the new mandate, we have 90 applicants. The new mandate will be from 2024 to 2029. The selection procedure is taking place right now, so let's hope we will have many university programs joining. The EMT network meets officially 2 times a year in a plenary in the context of a scientific research-specific conference. One meeting is held online, and one meeting is hosted by an EMT university in a national member state. Except for the meetings, there is a continuous knowledge sharing between the members, cooperation and exchange of practices in translation, workshops like the Translating Europe workshops, Erasmus Plus programs, and other projects where the members jointly participated. Not only do they participate, Caroline, but also they explore and they actually lead the synergies between them.
Now, one last question, Anna. In a few days, the EMT board is meeting with the Lint expert group. How do you envisage this cooperation?
This cooperation is going to be very fruitful and creative, I think, and bringing these two groups together and closer has been an initiative promoted at the Translating Europe forum that took place in November. Academia and industry, Caroline, are not encapsulated. Mm-hmm. They are actually part of each other, and we have many professionals working in both sectors. Now we are in an era of digital revolutions, mm-hmm. and AI is always on our plate. Mm-hmm. It's being applied and not only implied, but applied in translation. And professional profiles and realities are dramatically changing. So our joint efforts with both groups are to cooperate with our associate experts and academics to upskill and reskill translators. Also to help organize internships and a smooth cooperation between the two actors, which are very valuable to us, train the trainers and face the challenges in a creative and cooperative manner.
Well, thank you very much, Anna Kokinidou, coordinator of the European Masters in Translation, and good luck for the meeting. Now let's turn to our experts' lively and enlightening discussion. The two Lint experts are Alexander Bondarenko and Britta Ogost. And the two EMT experts are Alexandra Krause and Emilia Perez. Alexander, I know that you came a long way from Ukraine, so we're all very impressed that
you
took the pain of making this long 3 days trip to be with us. Yeah, can you just say a few words about yourself?
Yeah, so actually, as I'm used to say, I'm wearing two hats. On the one hand, I'm an associate professor of Central Ukrainian University. The full name is Volodymyr Vinichenko Central Ukrainian State University. And at the same time, I'm head of a translation company called Translatel. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm wearing these two hats for 24 years already. And I guess I'm the youngest member of the Language Industry Group. This is actually
not the youngest.
Okay, the latest.
The latest.
So. Thank you. So, this is actually my first meeting for the Lint Group, but I'm impatient to step down to the floor and start dancing.
Because I got the impression, you know, I researched a bit about you, and I had the impression that collaboration between industry and university is something you're really, really keen on and quite passionate about.
Exactly. This is what I'm trying to spread idea about in Ukraine. And now, as I'm in Lind and we've discussed it for the whole day today, I feel like a fish in the water. So really, these are the ideas which are very dear to my heart.
Right, okay.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, because we have to say that Lind members and EMT members will meet tomorrow. But already today you had a Lint meeting, right?
Yes.
And so we're having this conversation before your actual meeting. Alexandra Kraus?
Yeah, I'm from the University of Vienna. I have a very long teaching experience. I'm a teacher, a genuine teacher, but I'm a translator too. I'm not an interpreter, but a translator for Italian and German and French and German. And I'm EMT board member since about 9 years. And one of my main issues, I have two core issues. One is the skill sets. And I think that the skills are the linkage to employability. And this leads me to cooperate a lot with the industry. And that is is the second core issue I'm dealing with the whole time. And that's why I'm collaborating since a long time with Lind, since it exists. Mm-hmm. And I'm in charge of the academic part of the ALIS survey, which is the European Language Industry Survey, which has been closed mm-hmm. a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And we've got the first results, the first data, which is raw data, but we are obviously thinking of what all this means for our cooperation, and that will be one of the issues we will be tackling tomorrow too.
Now, Emilia Perez, I always have this impression that you're Spanish because of your surname, but you actually come from Slovakia.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So, hi, everyone. And yes, I work in Slovakia. I'm head of the Department of Translation Studies in Nitra, in Slovakia, and I work there as a researcher and a trainer. And in Nitra, I am teaching modules on market competence and business administration, but also modules on audiovisual translation and media accessibility. So I am also a member of the EMT board, mm-hmm. where I had the great opportunity to establish working group on audiovisual translation. So that was something new we brought to the EMT, and I was very happy to do that because it seems that that was another element we maybe did not cover before. Mm-hmm. And similarly to colleagues, yes, also several heads on my head. So I work in academia and I like my job there because there is a lot going on, of course. But I still work in the industry and cooperate within the industry, mainly in the field of audiovisual translation.
And I think you have at least one Lind expert who is specialized in audiovisual translation.
Yes, Jota, who is, you know, a big personality in ABT, in the industry. So it's very good that we can also join forces in this field. And Jota is the organizer of the biggest event we have, both for academia and for industry in ABT, which is moving this year from Berlin to Budapest. So I think that is another area which can be very useful and which can bring new insights also to what we do here. Because as we spoke at TEF, not last year, but a year ago, we started looking at audiovisual translation, not as, you know, the funny and aesthetic part, which is still nice, and that's something the students, of course, would imagine as a first thing, but from the COVID times, from the war times, from everything which is here, unfortunately, recently, we see that it is a very important and strong tool for communication, even in contexts where we maybe would not expect it before. So we are looking at new areas also within our new working group towards medical translations, towards specialized translation, but also still nice and good old art.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Brigta, I'm not sure how to pronounce your surname. Should I say Agard?
It is actually a Danish name. I am German, but it's a Danish name because I married me to that name. So it's Orgo, but
Agard
is perfectly fine.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so I'm leading a large language service provider, LSP as we call it, in the Nordics. It's called Semantics. I'm have been a part of this industry for 2 decades, so... Sometimes someone called me an industry veteran, which really makes me feel old. And I have so mainly worked on the, let's say, the commercial side of it. However, the customer base that we have is also very much public clients, also the EU Commission, obviously. And I've always been very much interested in really finding also the intersection of language also being, you know, part of democracy and part of also the simple idea of Europe. So I've always been, that has been very close to my heart. And from an industry perspective, my focus is also and has always been not only with the advent of Gen AI, but technology. I mean, technology-enabled language. Really also, for me, this is probably the best that ever happened, also to our industry, and without being, you know, too optimistic about it, I definitely also see the breadth and the concerns and the challenges, but the opportunities I think we should really focus on, and this is the perspective I want to bring also to academia and also in the curricula, so that we really are opening up our minds and also our skills to what is actually needed.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Now I will turn to our EMT members here. In your view, what does the EMT network bring to translation training?
Alexandra, I think it's your place to start because you were there from the onset of the main activities.
Yeah. So what our feeling is that it's, first of all, it's really a nice community. It's a knowledge hub. We are really sharing best practices. And what we also can do, we can help universities being EMT members and even outside the EMT to develop the right programs, being future-oriented, technology-oriented. There is still some, let's say, reticence towards technology in some areas, in some other areas less. And within the EMT, we can show which progress and which advantages technology and future-oriented teaching can bring. And we are a sort of pulling force or driving force for all those developments, which the EMT is really nice for. Mm-hmm. And it also becomes a community. As far as I know, the majority of the members are proud being part of the MT. So that gives you a feeling to be part of something specific, something special, something very European. And this also is an incentive to do more. You know, academia is not in an easy situation. No, we can't say financially.
And it's never been actually.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, but as I'm working in academia for more than nearly 40 years, so I realized the difference. And what we also had to make clear is that translation is really a specific discipline and a specific field, because we were originally we were all coming from philologies, and which is a different setting, and philology doesn't care that much of technology, obviously, because to them it's completely different. The issues and the aims are different. So we have really to separate, to split, acknowledging all the values of philologies. But I think we really have to define translation and interpreting in a very modern way, and we have really to make clear that we are a separate discipline that is worth being pursued and that is worth being supported. Because in the university landscape, there are some trends to make the programs become part of, let's say, part of economic studies, part of language studies in a more general way, part of legal studies, which could be nice because, okay, it's clear that domain knowledge is important, but as soon it you lose your characteristic, you lose your profile as soon as you become part of something, and you lose also a big part of financial shares. And I think that's one thing that we really have to make clear. And as soon as we cooperate with the industry and the industry tells, even on a, so to say, political level, that interpreters and translators are needed with all the right skills, obviously, then it makes for us academics easier to impose ourselves and to make our needs clear. And that's what we really need, and that's what the MT is really bringing to us, I think.
Emilia, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I could not agree more, because really I think EMT is supporting this strong identity, because it's not that it's non-existent. We are translators, we are translation studies scholars, we are translation trainers, and the same goes for interpreting. But I think EMT label gives, you know, the strength for negotiations where we need them, so that is one of the internal aspects for us in academia. But for me, maybe to be a bit more personal, I really, I think I can say that because whoever is from my region of Europe knows that I come from a department which has strong history in theory of translation, in literary translation, and all those wonderful things, and I was always very proud of the heritage. But to be frank, such heritage sometimes makes it very difficult to progress towards new things. But I was lucky enough to be at the department as a student, and it was the department where I can work now, that I think it was quite early already when we signed the first big contract with the Association of the LSPs in Slovakia, and things really started changing rapidly.
Language service providers,
yes.
I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yes, sorry. Yeah, my apologies. So things really started changing, and that actually happened also thanks to the EMT, because actually the association believed that we have potential we can bring as well, so it wasn't a deal just for us, it was a deal which worked both ways. And I remember my previous boss, Professor Edita Gromova, which some of you remember, really coming back to Nitra, and you know, we had all of these modules on literary translations, and of course we loved those, and she was like, you know, like there are CAT tools and there are these things, and she was really fighting a lot for starting new things in the time when it was not that common in Slovakia. And things started changing quickly, and EMT somehow brought the opportunity to talk about this with industry representatives, but also with other colleagues. So, for example, maybe in our region of Europe, we would always have the feeling like, it's nice that industry wants us to work with technologies, but in 2009, every license was paid, and no one in, you know, Central and Eastern Europe would give you funding for that. So But this changed as well, and the colleagues in the EMT will tell you, well, if you approach this person, maybe you can negotiate how to have a deal which works for everyone. Or maybe if you speak to this partner in the EMT, we can find a common grounds and common project, and this could work. And I really went from, you know, being a student, you know, going through all of the poems and everything, coming to first classes on CAD tools, which I loved, coming to my first internship in Budapest in one of the companies, where I was really like amazed, and I thought like, oh, this is slightly different, and now being head of the department when really we have several trainers training here, but in Nitra, who are from the industry as well. We found ways how to do it in terms of contracts, but we didn't find it because we are amazing. We found it because there were other, you know, 50, 60 colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
to many of them, you could really talk openly and they would provide you with some advice and guidance mm-hmm. how to go on about it. So for me, even personally, like if I look at the path we had in my university, I really can see the benefits because I think Alexandra would agree and maybe colleagues here as well that we do come across that question like, okay, so this sounds nice and the label is nice, but does it really work? Mm-hmm. Come on, it can't.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I can say it does because we can really see the benefits. So
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for me, it really has great value.
You were mentioning, Alexandra, that Lindt Group or the industry in general
mm-hmm.
helped you to emphasize the needs in the market for interpreters mm-hmm. and translators.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say, Lindt experts here, that is what you bring to the translation training?
My first motivation actually to join as a Lindt member was actually when I, for example, saw the you know, the vision of the single market and, you know, a digital Europe, and seeing all the programs which are extremely important for Europe as such, in all aspects. Still, language was not, I mean, the interoperability was not on a semantics level. It was not on a language level or too little. So that was one of my really also motivations to go into this. But then I was really happy about learning about also the collaboration with the EMT, because that is actually the infrastructure that is needed in order for us to actually build
mm-hmm.
all these communities. And so I'm really happy that there is such a strong collaboration between, because there is obviously, what should we call it, some kind of latency always. I mean, what we as an industry need and
mm-hmm.
before it gets through a curriculum and also overcoming some kind of latency or closing a gap. That was really my motivation to contribute.
Exactly. So actually, if we take average industry representatives and average academia representatives, they are more or less neutral. So they're not that much eager to cooperate and to see something in common. While if we speak about Lindt members, I mean experts, and EMT experts and representatives, they are those who are eager to see something in common, eager to bridge this gap that they say exists, actually naturally exists, and find something important in this cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
So this would make, this is actually the advantages that we may have in this cooperation, and what makes Lindt and EMT experts a bit different from
mm-hmm.
average industry.
Yeah, I can only emphasize that. I mean, I think the Lindt group and obviously also the EMT, I mean, there needs to be a bigger vision behind, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
if it's only for us, for the industry to have talent to sell our services, I mean, that would be a rather limited vision to have. So I think this is exactly, as you
mm-hmm.
say, Alexander, there is more to it that we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also, I mean, this is a long-term commitment. And as
mm-hmm.
I can also hear, you have been working on this for many, many years, and it needs this long-term investment and commitment.
And
it's not quick fixes.
Yes.
You have to
yes.
build trust. Because at the very first beginning, 10 or 15 years ago, when we started with that, there was really an enormous gap between academia and industry. And then we really step by step built up trust and confidence and cooperation. And I think we have now really reached a perfect level, and we could become a model for all those neutral ones that
mm-hmm.
Alexander was
mm-hmm.
talking of. Because the neutral ones have to be dragged in this feeling. They have really to understand what we are doing and what the advantage is as a big vision and not for a specific program or a specific industry.
I think that's a wonderful point you make. Yeah. I mean, it's trust, and I really feel that it goes both ways. Yeah. So, I mean, traditionally, maybe the language service providers were always the bad guys who only want, you know, to pay as little as possible. And that's actually not the case, because when you have the bigger vision, I mean, it's an ecosystem that we all care about.
Yeah, and academia was always only the researchers living in an ivory tower, not knowing what is happening in the outer world. And I think we really overcame this now, and for a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad about that. And it was not an easy work even to convince colleagues in academia sometimes, because there was a dichotomy. And this was a very pronounced dichotomy. And we had really to do it step by step. And I'm really glad to be part of it, because it gives me the feeling now we can relax and really work on what we need to work, and not only need
we can
on
work
the atmosphere.
Together.
Yeah, not only on the atmosphere. Yes. You see, it's settled now, and now we can really start doing concrete things. We had, for example, for the internships. Internships are also an issue we have to talk about, because internships are the first step towards profession. And we had Agora, I think it's 10 years ago, it was an EU project, where we really tried to establish a platform for internships, an European one, which worked out nicely, but which was so work intensive and so demanding for and financially and everything, that we couldn't really keep it. And now we have to think, because internships, let's say 10 years ago, internships abroad were something very rare. Now it's normal to go all over Europe and even outside Europe to do internships. So we need really to have a working system where we can trust, because, I mean, we trust each other within the Lind, but there are some LSPs where you shouldn't send your students, to be sincere. Yeah, sorry to say so, but it's a fact. And so we really have to have a stable system for that, because this is the first impact with industry, and it can spoil everything or it can make the future brilliant for students.
Thinking about the internship, there should be some minimum recommendations or even requirements. If a company accepts students, that then probably the company should qualify and have give back something to the students, at least to show them what they have done right and what they have done wrong.
Yeah, feedback.
Exactly.
Policy. I'm in charge of internships since over 10 years in our faculty, and I really saw generations of interns, and to see what can happen in a positive and in a negative way.
And as well as the market is becoming more and more global, it is very important. I mean, it's always nice to have experience, working experience from your own country. And if we have some of our smaller languages, that's probably what your idea would be naturally. But the market is not like that anymore. Like, our students have 2, 3, 4 languages, and they really could work with other languages. It's not ideal, because, again, ideally in books we say something else. But the reality is different and relates to different positions. And I think it is also time to start talking about our students having the experience of other than, you know, the market in my city or in the LSPs just next to my house, or where my university is. And this is something I would love to see, because then really I think the experience is valuable. And even if they learn like bad things, or they learn like this is too tough, I think that's very important. And it's up to them to realize whether that's going to be their part or not. But I think it's time to open the opportunities a little bit for our students from whichever region they come and whichever language they have. Because we actually found out with how the market is changing, but also how the society is changing and the geopolitical issues we are facing, because we are not living in our bubble. We are part of something which is happening everywhere. We do need all languages, and we do need them quickly. So training our students, you know, in small, tiny projects in our tiny cities, I think we can go much further than that. So that is something I would like to discuss with the Lind experts as well.
And I think to your point, and what we are also evaluating now when we're looking at also EMT applicants is also interpersonal skills. I believe this becomes more and more important. And as you said, sometimes you also really learn something personal from a maybe not so good experience, right? So it is much more, also it's much broader than the actual linguistic skills. And yeah, you're making a strong point that the world is global and it needs a different profile.
Now, how do you perceive the changes that are happening in the translation industry at the moment? I can kind of see what Britta is going to say, but I just wanted to mention this article that was published in Le Monde a few days ago, which said, les traducteurs littéraires victimes de l'intelligence artificielle.
Seulement les littéraires.
Le métier des traducteurs tend à se réduire à des contrats de post-édition. So basically, post-editing contracts that are paid less for a work which takes more time than the actual translation. So what? How do you see these changes? Some of us see artificial intelligence as an existential threat to the profession. Others see loads of opportunities. What's your stance on that? And what jobs do you see emerging? What new jobs do you see emerging? Sorry, it's many questions at the same time. So just pick the one you want.
Yeah. So globally, the picture that I give to my students is that progress is a train which is moving forward. So the only choice you have is either you step in, you jump in this train, which is moving very rapidly, or you're at the platform grumbling that rates are not that, or that the AI is killing the profession. And some 20 plus years ago, when I was joining the industry, CAD tools were killing the profession. In some 20 years, something else will be killing the profession. So there are only two options, whether you're in or out. So we have only to acquire new skills and be ready to, you know, to fight your way in this industry. Mm-hmm. So there will be always place for you to, you know, to survive and be quite comfortable within this profession and within this niche.
Yeah, as I said in the beginning, I think this is the best that ever happened to us, to our industry, because it really, really is a unique opportunity for us to position language as strategically important, as humanly important, as important for, I mean, who we want to be, what societies we want to have, and also from as a service provider. I mean, translation has always been a cost, a service that you need to pay for. But now we are really both, in academia, but also in the industry, we are now able to put it at the center of everything, basically, right? I also think it's a misconception that AI now will replace machine translation or translation. That is, I see that completely different. I mean, translation or CAD tools as your machine translation, I mean, that had a single purpose. I mean, it's basically to, you know, cut costs or translate faster
or assist translators.
Mm-hmm. But from an efficiency point of view, I mean, it was a productivity tool. Most likely, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas generative AI now has a multi-purpose, and it's actually not developed to replace translation. On the mm-hmm. contrary, I mean, it gives you the opportunity to, let's say, sentiment analysis. You can build AI applications. You can actually use the linguistic data to create new software systems, applications, use cases. So I think we need to have the focus on that AI is actually enlarging our field in so many ways. And I also, I mean, back to very important questions about ethics, which this discussion also has led to, that, I mean, it shows that it's in the language also that the ethics is anchored, right? So, again, I think we have such an opportunity to put us in the right place, finally. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, I don't know, maybe I would make the parallel to media, naturally, because yes, I mean, video did not kill the radio and newspaper, mm-hmm. and streaming platforms did not kill TV. What happened is that all of this media changed, and everyone working there merged the skills with maybe something else they did not do before, but at core they needed to be really experts in what they were supposed to do originally. And for me, yes, we don't know 100% what's going to happen, and yes, we should be concerned in a way, but not in a negative way. We should maybe really start thinking about what are the new skills and how we should train our students. And we are doing a lot already in academia. We spoke about this in our meeting in Salamanca. There is a lot going on in various areas because, as Britta said, it's not affecting the process of translation, but everything. But even for me, although I'm always a bit more careful when there is some, you know, new advancement, but I think we cannot be skeptical. We have to understand what is happening and we should use the opportunity it is giving us. And for our students or our trainers, whether in my university or even if we speak about this issue with the colleagues in EMT, this is the important part. They are going to use it. It's an amazing source of information to verify the resources, to help them with their English. Sometimes to verify their resources, if you are working via people languages, that's amazing. You can really get something explained which you would never, it would take you a month to find out about, you know, what something is, what it looks like, what it is used for. But there are the mistakes and they will always be there, which is natural because it's, you know, humans make mistakes. And I think we need to put more focus on speaking to our students openly about the issues which are there. Not to put them off using, well, AI or technology in general, but really to take the responsibility, because that responsibility is on us. Now, then later it's on them. Come on, they are adults, so they should know what they are doing. But I would really seize it as an opportunity. But I think we have to react quickly to tell them what the issues are. Ethics, yes, it is an issue, but it is an issue if you are going to misuse it. So I think it's up to us to explain what that issue actually means, because we speak a lot about ethics in translation, ethics with technology, but sometimes during the seminars, the students, yeah, there is this topic on ethics and this question, but they don't really, it's very vague. So this is something we should discuss much more. There is a lot of research done, but there is not that much research which speaks about this from training perspective. So if you are looking for papers related to didactics, you don't find many. So that is a topic we should deal with.
It's on a theoretical level.
Yes, do you need to verify information? Come on, they were telling that to me when I was a student, so that has not changed. But the extent to which and to the things you should be, you know, interested in and careful about is different. Not bigger, different. And that different is something we should show, we should train. Then it's up to them. So, as I said, for me, huge opportunity for us, for our students, for everything that brings to world of translation and interpreting, I think, as well. But I think we really need to react quickly in order to tackle the issues which can be there for novice translator. I think if experienced translator, 40, 50 years old, who is willing to use this technology and this source is going to deal with it, then they're not going to have that much trouble. There is, you know, normally we hear, oh, it's all the people who don't want to. That's not true. And if they are good, if they are experts, this is not going to be a problem for them. Where it is going to be a problem might be a novice translator who maybe does not feel enough responsibility, which is natural, or does not maybe have the natural intuition or the professional intuition developed to know that there is something wrong in this amazing sentence, or there is something wrong in this piece of information I'm really happy that I have, but they need to know how to spot the problems.
I also want to turn this a little bit around. What I also find fascinating now that, I mean, AI and machine translation in general has become so much better is also, I think we are starting to realize that we also need to look at that there is something that we thought only humans could do, quality evaluation. Now machines can do, maybe sometimes better even.
They don't make mistakes.
They don't make mistakes. Of course, we need to know what mistakes they're looking at.
Those mistakes.
But in a world that is not only global, but also where the volumes are so massive of data, that these tools can actually maybe make an estimation even better or safer than humans could do. And I think it's a very interesting thought to have, because then we can also maybe align on what is quality, actually. I have that discussion because it's not one thing, but it's not necessarily, you know, the old scale of the more human, the better.
My two last questions. One is there a need also to train the trainers?
For sure.
And if yes, can Lint or can the language industry be useful for that?
Well, there are two perspectives, and I am a bit critical sometimes, but it's not being critical, it's actually drawing something from my maybe own experience, so this is please don't take it as some objective truth, because it's not. But what happens now a lot is that we have people from industry coming to us for upskilling. That is something we don't talk a lot about, but of course we can't do the upskilling in everything. We can do it in certain areas. So I think this can be beneficial for the industry from side of academia. And yes, trainers do need upskilling, but good trainer is aware of that. And he has many opportunities to do that. And yes, if we have strong cooperation with the industry, even better, because then he's going to have the right idea of what he or she needs. So for me, yes, trainers need to be retrained, but not only trainers, because if we speak about huge companies, things are different than still in local companies or national companies. I'm not speaking about some mini little agency, but you know, the companies we have in our countries, and they do have other issues. They are afraid of what is happening now. That is a market issue, so you know, that's up to them to deal with it. But things are changing for everyone, not only for academia. Things are changing for everyone in that sort of ecosystem. And I think, yes, trainers do need other training, but we can see that industry is sometimes turning also around looking for where to get it. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, having something international and using the potential Lind has, that is something perfect, because we have the strongest partners there and they can share their expertise, not only with us, but also within the industry, of course, to the level they want to share it and to the level where it makes sense. But I think we all need to be trained, everyone mm-hmm. who is in this ecosystem, because it's changing rapidly, not only for academia, mm-hmm. for everyone.
Long life. True learning.
So yeah, long life learning. Yeah, we're not going to get bored. That's, yeah. good. That's a good thing.
So yeah. It pops another small or maybe big question, whether academia should listen to every whim of industry. Okay. To wrap up mm-hmm. what you asked some time ago about what Lind can bring to mm-hmm. EMT and mm-hmm. to academia, is probably trying to sort out the best practices, what is really important yeah. and what should and can't be neglected. Maybe one very small aspect, which is also important. So academia understands why it's important to cooperate with industry, since actually they produce, yes, future. The graduates, the future, yes. Mm-hmm. While another probably task of Lind is to explain to industry why it's important to cooperate with academia. So it's another aspect, and also very important problem, since not many in industry also understand this importance of cooperating with academia, if taking students for internship that give something back to the students, since they will return to them. And this is something that cannot be neglected as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, there are some LSPs telling me that they're running out of good manpower or woman power. Yeah. And sometimes I get some offers for jobs and things like that, and I start really thinking whom I can, for my students, whom I can really send there and say, try to apply for that, having a good conscience, you see? Mm. And that's a bit a strange feeling. In former times, I had one job, two jobs, one internship, two internships, and a lot of people who seemed to be at level. And now, sometimes, I'm a bit wondering if I really do the right thing, yeah, sending mm-hmm. a person in a company or something like that, which means there is a change in the ecosystem, in the training, and in the demands of the industry, I think. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But this is true for any job, I think, nowadays, for medicine jobs, for legal jobs, for everything. You get the feeling you're always trying to train people for the future, and this, you have established a program for any study course, you get the feeling, oh, you are outdated because things developed so yeah. quickly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. you need a certain bureaucratic time for developing such programs. You can't say we change it every year. That's impossible for structural reasons and infrastructural reasons. So you end up having a program where you get the feeling, wow, now it's the nicest and best one you have ever got. And then you realize, oh, it doesn't really work out for reality anymore, you see. Mm. That's a bit the problem we have as academia.
And probably I think the way I see it is also, I mean, you're totally right, we are running out of talent because, as you said previously, that, I mean, we really need people who are really, really specialists, really know, and at the same time have all the other skills. that they might not necessarily learn in the program. So how to overcome that, and yeah, maybe also, you know, working across academia with the different field. Of course, there is probably computational linguistics and translation overlaps.
That's
there. I think we need to think even more
joint in programs.
Joint programs, because it's about complexity. It's and specialization at the same time, which is a paradox. But that is really what we need to solve.
That's what we have started.
So CPD may have another meaning now. It's besides continuous professional development, it can also be read now as continuous program development.
Yeah, yeah, partly. But that's what we are doing. We are trying really to have joint masters in Vienna, one a technology language master or language technology master. It depends what you, where you have
where
the,
you
focus
the focus
on.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But and I think even this sort of joint master should be done within the MT universities, because I got the impression that nearly every EMT program has its focus, its specialization. And if we could join forces for that in creating joint programs with your industry help, saying, for example, oh, we know that degree holders from this faculty are good in this or that, yeah? Then you say, okay, we make a joint master 1 year here and 1 year there, and then they have, I won't say the whole panorama of skills that you may need, but a bit more than a normal degree holder, then we have just come to a very, very good point, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, I would be always a bit worried about the limitation of what MA degree has, because you can join, sorry for saying that, but you can join whichever programs together. I don't mean within EMT, but with different specializations.
Yeah.
And you're always going to have 2 years. And you're always going to have, in some countries, only 1 year of MA. So what can happen in the country, and we see that happening in some of the countries and some of the members, so actually you make the program broader, but the students, they learn less, because the time is the same. So you learn half of what you would learn on translation degree, and you would learn half of what you maybe would learn on computing degree, and that might not be enough. What we need to do is not to make it interdisciplinary, but in that proper sense, to make the degree, which is one or the other, which is language specialist with the technological skills we need. Because what we saw happening a few years ago, when this was, you know, really big topic, and we've seen that in some countries, and we've seen those programs close down, is that not many people who would go in a digital path, who enter the degree connected to language and translation, were really maybe that strong in either of the skills. And it just really didn't work out. They didn't really have big employability results in this field. So I think that not the problem, but what we have to start thinking of, it's not joining the two things existing separately now together, because you have the same limited time and you have people who, you know, might not really clearly know what they are actually going to study. But we should try to find a way, and this is for 100 years, but we need to do it like much faster, so let's say next few, where the specialization should show the intersection, but it should be clear to the students, to the trainer, to trainers' profiles. If you have to separate things, join to the same time, you get half and half of each, and that might not work well.
Mm-hmm.
That might not always motivate the students to really understand what their position is going to be, to what their future job is going to be, because that is experience we have sometimes. I'm not saying always, there are programs where it works, and probably again in our network, those are the ones where we should turn, but you do get this sometimes, that the profiles are unclear and there is not sufficient time. But I would love to see this idea, and I think it's very important to speak about it openly, because even our programs, we are, you know, on the Bologna system, and we would think that they are very similar, and they are not. In each country, it can be very different. You can have a lot and very strong, and we could see that before when we still had UK, you could really see some of the differences, because in some of the universities, and they were translation MA degrees for 1 year, and they really had very strong technology element within the translation studies program. And then you could have a translation degree when there would be still, and it is reality in Europe, maybe one general discipline on CAT tools. One. That's where CAT tools is used. So I don't like generalizing this too much, because there are so many differences. I think we should try to look at where it works and how, and then benefit from that. Quickly saying what we're doing is wrong and let's do it differently, and then we find out that it's wrong, it doesn't really move us somewhere.
But we have just good experiences now in Vienna, and that's why
I was not talking about Vienna.
What I meant is it depends a lot of the entrance level, because if the entrance level is high, you can build up a much better master than if you accept anybody. Yeah, that's one aspect, and that could be a legal aspect, because, for example, we in Austria are not entitled to define, I mean, theoretically we are entitled to define an entrance level, but no entrance exams, so you have to accept people on one hand side. And then what we could think of, and that's what I was thinking of, is a sort of postgraduated after the master, a postgraduate course after the master, a specialization course after the 2 years, or, for example, for Spain, 1 year master. And there you really create a manpower which is really specialized and really excellent, I think. Mm-hmm. And there you can join forces from different disciplines, I think. So we have to make clear that, okay, training becomes longer, training becomes more expensive maybe, but the output and your employability, although is really affected by, in a positive way by such a longer and more specialized training. So if we take it from this perspective, then things could work out. Obviously not within 1 year, that's clear.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think we need to wrap up now, so yeah. Otherwise you never have your dinner. My last question would be, so you are going to meet tomorrow and you will brainstorm all day. If you had to quote one expectation, one thing that you hope to achieve tomorrow, what would it be? Maybe we can start with Britta.
We have now the basis of both trust, but also think a shared vision that is very important, because in the end we have the same goal, I believe, and then work with very concrete ideas of programs and experiment, and because it's the latency that we need to overcome.
I am not very original, because I would actually say the same, because we do, I think all of us have the experience of having similar discussions in our countries, in different fora, within some other associations, but sometimes you do get a feeling that we need to move further from the, I don't mean it in a bad way, but from the basic issues, you know, there is not enough cooperation, academia is not doing enough, industry is not listening. I really would like to move away from that, because that's a waste of time for both sides. And my main expectation is that this is not going to happen with Lind Group. I know many of the members, so I know it's going to be very different. And yes, I would like to see very concrete, maybe suggestions, designs for not having the solutions, because that's going to take longer, but for having the plan how we're going to look for the solutions together.
I'm dreaming of an European internship platform that really works. Yeah, this would be really a step forward.
Or a second, what was it? Agora. A second Agora.
Yeah, yeah, okay. But let's say a more consistent and Europe-wide internship platform that really works and that is really cute, so that updated, let's say, once a month or even more. And if we could have an agreement about that, and obviously, it's manpower, it's financing, it's everything. I mean, it's not easy doing. I'm totally aware of all those constraints. But this would be my dream, my wish for tomorrow.
Well, and yeah. Alexander.
As I mentioned at the beginning, I'm a fresh member of Lind, so I have a lot of ideas that I'm eager to share about the internship, the minimum requirements or recommendations, which I mentioned, just for the industry also to give, not only to take the interns. Also about the post-editor profile, just to shape somehow the profile of post-editor and share my ideas about it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This was DGT Radio with Anna Kokinidou and Inka-Lisa Vihonen from DigiTranslation, Britta Ogort and Alexander Bondarenko from the Linked Expert Group, and Alexandra Krause and Emilia Perez from the EMT Network. Thank you for listening.